Welcome to the Gear Garage Live Show. This weekly YouTube show covers whitewater rafting, river safety,
oh God, I lost my paddle,
gear, and anything else Zach feels like rambling on about.
Well, it's Tuesday, and here we are again for the Tuesday live show that I do on YouTube Live, where I answer questions that have been submitted throughout the week. Or if you want to go in the comments and you're watching and add a question, please do. A lot of the great conversation comes from the comment section, so please keep those coming. Also, there's a lot of questions I get. I have no idea what the answer is. And so if you're watching live with me and you can answer them in the comments, that would be sweet, because there's things I just don't know. There's a lot of things I don't know. And with that, let's get started. We have a couple things to do this show. The first is talk about these new flip lines. And for those of you that don't know, I have an online store called riverhardware.com. It's a hobby. It's just fun for me. It's actually really fun for me. I get a weird hit of dopamine every time something sells. It feels really good. And I'm kind of addicted to working on it. So please be patient as I explain this newest product. And when I say working on it, it could be making the website better, taking photos, or working on products. And this is the newest product. This is what I call a flip line. And this is what, I don't call it that. I think a lot of people call it that. It's just a 12-foot strand of super high-tech webbing that's pretty strong. So you could use it as a boat anchor. You can use it as a land anchor. It's not for climbing. It says specifically on it, if you can see that, not for climbing. Please don't use this for vertical access, rappelling. It's strong, but it hasn't been tested for that stuff. So who knows? I don't know if you could use it for that. I do feel comfortable with it in like a horizontal thing, if there's not lives on the end of it. And this is something I feel like everybody should be carrying in their PFDs along with a knife. This is something that could be just a quick, you could throw to somebody really quick, like a quick 10-foot, this is 12 feet, a quick 12-foot rope. You could quickly clip onto your raft and hold onto it from shore. It works great to flip the boat back over. And I would pair it with a carabiner. So it works really well with a carabiner. I'm a big fan of these Rock Exotica Pirate carabiners for a number of reasons. And so you just, leave and then clipped in, and you're ready to go for the variety of things this can be used for. This is ultra high molecular weight polyethylene, which is just the highest tech rad stuff out right now. And I thought a lot about the length and the width of this. I think 12 feet is a good length. I think that's the right length for a variety of things. So I chose 12 feet. The width is 14 millimeters, and regular webbing is an inch, which an inch is how many millimeters? Somebody knows, like 2.56, I think. So 2.56 centimeters. So 25 centimeters is an inch. So this is over half an inch. A full inch is great. I mean, wider is better, but I wanted to make this small and compact so you could carry it in your PFD pocket. So it's easily carryable. If you make it too thin and you go to grab this, it's hard to grab onto. And it can actually cut your hand if it moves through your hand. It moves too fast. So I tested a lot of different widths and sizes. And the compromise between like small in your PFD, but also usable, I felt was 14 inches. And yeah, this is just a cool thing. It's for sale at riverhardware.com. If you're looking for a flip line, if you already have one, but you want the highest tech, latest, greatest one, this is it, I think. If you don't have one, you should have one. This is how you flip boats back over. Like I said, if you, the one that gets stuck in the river and people throw you a bag, you can use this to do a 2-point anchor. You should practice first. You can use this as a land anchor in like a low load, like 3-to-1 system. I'm going to go kayaking this afternoon and the takeout's really tough. I'm going to clip it onto a D-ring, get out of my kayak, or clip it onto a handle on my kayak at one spot where I have to get out of my boat and get out of my boat and have a leash for my kayak. So I use these things all the time, and that's why I'm such an advocate of a flip line. It can be this. You can just get a piece of rope, honestly, like tie a couple of knots at the end. These are sewn loops. So ideally, we haven't tested this completely, the sewn loop is stronger than the fabric. So if you pull on this, the fabric's going to break before the sewn loops come undone. If you tie a knot in the end of just a rope, the knot is the weak part. And so that's a weakness. But if you're just going to use some rope and have knots at each end, you're probably not going to use that for land anchors, boat anchors, which is fine. You still have this like leash you can use for your boats, or a flip line thing you can have in case your boat or somebody else's boat flips. So with that, let's get on to questions. That's our little advertisement, and I'm super excited about the flip lines. On that note, those of you that were interested in the bungee flip lines for cataracts, I think I'm going to have some available tomorrow. So check the store out tomorrow. Just quick note. The size I have work really well if the distance between the D-rings is 50 inches, which is most 12 and a half foot cats. It's pretty ideal for 12 and a half foot cats. More sizes coming later. But tomorrow, I think I'll have my first flip blinds as well. So let's get on to questions. Whoa, this is a long one. Let's see. This is Air 130E versus Super Puma. Oh, man. I'm going to tell you the quick. The 130E is such a cool design. It's, for those of you who don't know, it's really, it has a pointy bow and a square back. In my opinion, yes, I am not the expert here on everything. So I'm going to tell you my opinion. And, you know, I could be wrong. I'm probably wrong, actually. This is the 130E. If you look at it from the top, that's showing up there, it's like a bullet. It has that really squared off bow with some decent rocker. Let's see if there's a good side view. And the back is nice for guiding. And I like boats that are symmetrical. Like, I don't like this because it's not symmetrical. But my friends, the R2 really hard stuff, love this boat because they don't end up backwards that often. For me, I end up backwards sometimes. So I just want to be like, I'm backwards now. Let's just go with it. But if you're like R2ing at a super high level, this 130E is like a bullet. And it goes over drops well, powers and things well. I think for those people that are running the hardest of the hard class 5, especially R2ing, this is a great boat. Otherwise, I'm not a huge fan of the design. I think it even says here the uniquely shaped 130E is ideal for steep, fast-flowing rivers. It even says that. It features a high-rising bow and smaller diameter tubes, which for challenging rivers. So if you're R2ing class 5, I think this is a sweet boat. If it's your day-to-day boating, honestly, the 130, I'm a fan of the 130R. I don't think that boats need to have diminishing tubes. So the R, I don't see, I see, here we go, 130D, 130. I don't know how to use the website. But the R series, it says our best, most stable all-around whitewater boat. That's just their best all-around like thing. Go with the R series, the D series diminishing, the double D very diminishing, which I wouldn't go with. In my opinion, for most cases, the R series is sweet. The Super Pumas are a little narrower. They're also good for R2ing. I would say, like, if you're R2ing a lot of our class 2, 3, 4, awesome boat. For rowing, it's okay. But if I'm going to row a lot, I'm going to go with the regular R series. If I'm going to paddle more, I'll probably go with the Puma. That's just my opinion based on my experience. And I'm sure I'm wrong. And if I am, please, people, tell me in the comments. Okay. I haven't even got to your question. So anyway, 130E, if you're class 5, cool. If you're getting gnarly, cool. Super Puma, if you're like class 2, 3, 4. If you're going to row, neither one, 130R. Okay, here we go. I'm on the East Coast, and I'm R2ing most of the time. All right, cool. But I've been taking my family and friends more often lately, and I've also got a frame, and I've been rowing it. Okay. I'm currently on a Mini Max, but the size is just too small. I agree. Mini Maxes are cute. They're fun. On the East Coast, my friends are taking them out on little creeks and things all the time. Rad. Like, cool. But as a day-to-day, just your day-to-day boat, I think it's a weird boat. It's a cool boat, but it's just, it can't be your all-around boat. I like the price on the Super Puma better. I just wonder if the guiding position would be uncomfortable. No, I think it's fine. I've guided Super Pumas. It's fine. Would you put a frame on a 130E with a different shape of the bow and stern? You could. I wouldn't, as I mentioned before. You could. What would be the best all-around between those two boats? They're both equally not all-around. Neither one of them is the best all-around boat. The best all-around boat, just get the 130R. I would just do that. It's best for rowing. It's great for paddle boating. It's going to do great in a class 5 stuff. Like, yeah. Are the ballast floors a pain to deal with? Some people hate the ballast floors. They hate them. I know I have a lot of friends who absolutely hate the ballast floors. It makes the boat weigh a little bit more. When you get out of the water, you have to drain it. Water pees all over you. It's kind of annoying. The big advantage is that it's a ballast. It keeps the boat like from flipping because there's a ballast and because there's a little bit of, I really believe there's suction between the floor and the water. So they're pain, but just get over it. It's fine. Or just pay more and get the sealed floor. I think the ballast floor is better, but if you don't want the floor peeing on you and you carry it, then just get the sealed floor. It's not a whatever. Thank you for taking the time to answer. Yeah, of course. All right. So we got some comments. Man, the E's would be sweet stern frame boats too. Yeah. Interesting. I guess. I just, that bow on the E, it's just like a bullet. I wonder if it would be. I wouldn't like it, but I see where you're going with that. Just because it has a big, like that big area in the back to put the stern frame. The bow is just so weird to me for like a paddle boat. I just don't like that bullet shaped bow for a paddle boat. It's weird to me. Sean, yeah, East Coasters. I hope you guys are all doing well. I mean, that's, yeah. I kind of want to do a show on the floods and bring a friend on, talk about it, because I think it'll be really interesting just to hear first, just talk to a friend who's out there. I mean, they've just been through so much. It's insane. Their world has changed. All right, move on. Glue recommendation. I'm looking for an ideal glue to cover stitched seams on a Hypalon bag to make it waterproof after sewing. Do you have any recommendations on what I should use? I don't think that what you're asking for even exists. Like a glue you just put over the seams. I mean, it's kind of what Aqua Seal is, but anything you put over the seams is going to get like knocked off, I believe, over time. I would put a patch over it. That's what I think the manufacturers do. Like, get some Hypalon glue. I think you have to decide between Clifton and Shore Adhesive. In my opinion, Clifton is awful and terrible and should never be used. So get Shore Adhesive, get some Hypalon material, and just patch over it. I think that's the key. Just putting glue on the top, I don't think, is a very permanent thing. Yeah. If anybody else has an answer, that's great. Need to clean the floor after dirty rivers and air rafts. Yeah, I mean, I own some air rafts, and the maintenance is kind of annoying. All these boats have pluses and minuses, you know. Yeah, there's the airs have so many pluses. The warranty is unbelievable, and nobody's even close on the warranty. But a downside is you get dirt and zippers and inside the boat, and you can have mold because you didn't get all the water out, and they're just more complicated. But yeah, something to think about. So if you're not on dirty rivers, it's not a big of a deal. River Radius. Yeah, River Radius. If those of you, first of all, just a shout out to River Radius Podcast. Awesome podcast. If you're listening to this as a podcast, which you can, like you can listen to this on Spotify, turn it off right now, because I listen to myself do this show. I listened to the first half of last week's show this morning. It's awful. Like the way I speak, my vocabulary, this is not meant as an audio podcast. It exists as an audio podcast, but it is awful. It is meant to be a live show where I can interact and talk to you. So if you're listening to this as a podcast right now, just turn it off and go to River Radius and listen to their podcasts. They are great. And Sam does a great job. I'm a huge fan. And if you can support him in any way, like that'd be great. And while you're at it, you know, don't forget to support Private Whitewater. That's another great YouTube channel to consider supporting. All right, next question. Whoa. All right, topic, unplugged. If I may have a video idea for your channel, working title, Time Beyond the Threshold, Life Without Cell Phones on Wilderness Trips. But the title choice is, of course, up to you. I guess I'm probably not going to make that video. Time Beyond the Threshold, Life Without Cell Phones on Wilderness River Trips. Yeah, to be really, I mean, I haven't read the question yet, but like to be super honest with you, I bring my cell phone on trips and I use it as a ton of time. I don't like to wear a watch on river trips, but I have my phone in my PFD. So if I need to tell the time, I can go, oh, that's what time it is. It's my camera now. I almost don't bring my camera on trips anymore. It's just my iPhone. I use it for an alarm in the morning. If I'm at work, I have to get up and make breakfast. I use it as a light sometimes, you know, when you're hanging on the campfire and you like have to stumble into your tent. It sure is nice to have a light all the time. And sometimes I'll fall asleep listening to a podcast. Like I'll be in the tent, I can't fall asleep, I'll throw a podcast on. So, I mean, I'm not where to speak to this. So my question, what is it like in 2024 with cell phones and headphones? You know, I guided before cell phones existed. I had my first guiding job, I had a pager because I would get paged when they needed a guide. Like, oh yeah, people booked, come in 3 hours, you have a trip. So I had a pager. Because I was my first year, I had a company I worked for like 3 days a week, and I rented guided for a bunch of different companies. And I just give my pager number. And I did multi-day trips way before cell phones were a thing. Nobody ever brought them on trips. And now they're almost everybody has their cell phones. And it's different. It's just different. There are people sitting around the chair circle because they're in reach texting out people. That's the thing that I see once in a while. I try to discourage that because it annoys people, but I've been in line for dinner before where somebody's sat phone rings and it's weird, but it's like, their sat phone ring, whatever. In the guiding world, we used to get back to the guide house after a trip. We would hang out like the guys, we'd just hang out on the couch a lot. And we'd end up drinking a lot too, because hanging out and drinking are like tied together. Now you get back to the guide house, the first thing the guides do is run and get their phones, check their phones almost every trip. It's not bad. It's just the new world. And then when we're hanging out at the guide house, instead of like us all going out hanging around together, a lot of times everybody's just on their laptops. And that's just our new world. And it's because you can check in with your family. You can check in with, I don't know, whatever. You can do homework. And so a lot of people see this as a negative thing. I just say it's the new world. And if you want to get away from cell phones, river trips have been that thing for a long time, a way to do it. And you still pretty much can. But what I notice is that people aren't. They're still bringing their, including me, they're still bringing their phones on trips. And we're not talking on the phone. We're not checking our Facebook yet. But that's coming, because satellite connectivity for internet is in our future. And so, I mean, honestly, and I'm not going to go on a river trip and tell people, like, you have to put your cell phone in a bag. You can't use it. Like, people are adults. They can do what they want. So in my opinion, like, it's different. We hang out less face-to-face. People are on their phones. If you want to hang out face-to-face, just put your phone down and find somebody. But the reality is, I bet 10 years from now, there'll be people sitting around a campfire. 8 of 10 people will be on their phones. And I know that's annoying. I know you don't want to hear that, but that's just the reality of the world we live in. And if you want to get away from cell phones, it's not going to be possible at some point. So that's a long diatribe, because I thought about this a lot. I've talked to our guides about this a lot, because our guides have come to me and said, Zach, you know, we should probably tell people they can't have their phones. And I'm like, okay, yeah, you too. You can't have your phone either. And they're like, yeah, okay, that's true. I do, like, you know, sometimes some of them will watch a TV show and they're 10 in the evening. Like, that's fine. It's life. Like, they want to watch a TV show and they're 10. They're, you know, like, we don't all have to stare at the stars, but you can choose to. Okay, enough of my pontificating. So what's it like in 2024 with cell phones and headphones? It's different. People have phones. People on the river are listening to music sometimes. It's very annoying to me when somebody's listening to, like, they're amplifying music, they're listening to a speaker. And I listen to music on a speaker sometimes, but when I go by another group, I always turn it off. I don't want to impede on somebody else's experience with my speaker. But like, if I'm by myself rowing a boat for some reason, or if I'm on the sweep boat, if I'm on the sweep boat all day on the Middle Fork, I might listen to a podcast. And so I'm by myself all day, or I'm with a friend and we want to listen to a podcast. But I'll turn it off when I go by somebody. Okay. The speakers and submersible digital light shows in Trail Creek Hot Spring on Deadheads. I've never seen speakers or submersible digital light shows. I've never seen those at Trail Creek. Almost all the guys have speakers or headphones on Deadheads. It's just how it is. Just listen to music, listen to podcasts. I don't know. On my Deadheads this year, I listen to some podcasts. I haven't seen a digital light show yet, but maybe that's coming. When you deadhead, you're not supposed to stop at hot springs. So hopefully that's not – I'm more concerned about people stopping at hot springs, because I don't want the ability for deadheads to be taken away. As guides, we're not supposed to impact – like, we're on a deadhead. We're not supposed to stop at hot springs. We're not supposed to do popular hikes. We're not supposed to impact the users of that river. And so, yeah, it's a thing. It might be happening. It's 2024. Is there an emergence of analog in response to this digital onslaught? I think everybody's talking about it. Everybody's like, oh man, phones are terrible. Got to get out there and digital detox. I think we're all talking about it, but people in reality aren't doing it as much as you would think. Yeah, I don't think so. But I also know that sometimes people come on trips with us and they don't have their cell phones, or kids don't have their cell phones, and that's a highlight of the trip. And I want to encourage that because people love that, that they actually have connecting with their family. And people do love that. But as soon as I'm on the bus and we get the salmon, you hear all their phones go beep, 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 beep. They're just glued to their phone. That's just, and that again, that is the world we live in right now. Okay. Is there still acoustic living in the guide culture, or is it just a relic of days gone by? By acoustic living, I think you're asking, do guides still talk? Or are you asking, do guides still sit around playing music? I don't know the thing, but the culture is different. Guide culture is different. Like we used to just like get done with the trip and hang out on the couch, find like, I can think of a million times I'd be hanging on a porch with a bunch of guides just shooting shit, watching Top Gun. We watch a lot of Top Gun, a lot of Braveheart. We drink a lot of beer. In some ways, we're healthier because we're not drinking as much. I mean, when you get a bunch of river guides hanging out after you've worked together for 1, 2, 7 days, there's not a lot of conversation left other than like talking bad about the river company you work for. And so drinking helps. And so that culture is also what's spawned a lot of the drinking problems in guiding. And so honestly, drinking's down from what I'm seeing. And part of that is just because like people go to their tent, car, whatever, call their parents, siblings, friends, or they go play a game on their phone. I mean, yeah, there's other things to do than just sit around on a couch on a porch and drink for 4 hours. I would like to hear your thoughts and discussions in the comment section about the relationship of digital, analog, and wilderness trips. Those are my thoughts. Yeah. So I'm guessing you would have thought me, I would be like, oh, phones are terrible. Like, it's ruining the experience. We shouldn't allow them. I think I'm very in the middle on this. I think there's some people who will like, yeah, there's like speakers everywhere. More and more people are, I bring a sat texting device with me as for emergencies. I never text out to check in the real world. But I do know guides who text out almost every night, which is fine. Like, I'm not going to stop them. I am in the middle. I bring my phone. I might listen to a podcast here and there. I won't play amplified music. I won't text out. And I don't even text out to the office to like check in on things. Where some companies, you have to text out every night. I don't even text out to just check on things. So I think there's the old timers who were like, phones are ruining the wilderness. And a lot of guides say phones are ruining the wilderness. There's a lot of people who are like texting out every night, playing music everywhere, watching television. I think I'm sort of like, people have them. That's on them. If they don't, whatever. I kind of like mine, but I also pull myself away from it. That's a lot of information. So sorry to go on quite a bit there. Let's see what Jay's saying. We're back on the pointy end boats. In my opinion, the pointy ended boats are more susceptible to reacting to river features, waves and all. Yeah. 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 I think so too. And also like that point is something that sticks. I feel like this way about duckies too. When you have a point and you're trying to swing past a rock, that point will hit a rock. And so I would rather cut that point off. And so I can be more maneuverable on Tentacle River. Here we go. Sean. I saw 23-foot company gear out on the main salmon. The guide said companies are going to those, even setting up as a sweep. Are sweep boats rare on the Middle Fork salmon? No. The guide said companies are going to those, even setting up as sweep. No, on the Middle Fork, everybody's still using regular sweep boats. I know there's one or two companies. There's one company that has a boat that is a raft that they run like a sweep on the Middle Fork, and then it gets to the main, they switch it to an oar boat. I know that exists at least once, but I don't think that, yeah, I mean, it's nice, like on the main salmon, they're probably sending gear boats ahead to set camp up or to like, you know, get some things ready. A bigger boat is better. So a 23-foot boat is probably better than an 18-foot boat because you can put more stuff in it. But I think, there's about 24 companies in the Middle Fork. I can't remember. There's 20. There's some weird permits. So let's just say there's 24 companies in the Middle Fork. I bet 20 of them have just traditional sweep boats. Maybe one of them doesn't have a sweep boat. I think they all do now. Maybe like one or two has like some sort of like sweep boat thing that can turn into a into a gear boat, or they just run a big gear boat. But I would say at least 20 of the 24, like, I don't know, whatever percent that is. 80, 90? I would say 90%+ will run sweep boats, and I think they'll continue to for a lot of reasons. One of them is just super cool. They're really fun to run. It's a unique thing. Another is just amazing at low water. You can get a 22-foot sweep boat down at 1.5. Getting a 23-foot gear boat down would be pretty rough at low water on the Middle Fork. So I think that's all for questions. Yeah, that's it for this week. Thanks, everybody, for watching. Appreciate it. I just want to remind you, if you're still watching, I am so chazzed on these flip lines. If you don't have one, I don't know, go buy one. Why not? If you have an old beater one or old technology, get one of these. I'm pretty confident you'll be stoked on them. Riverhardware.com. I'll put a link. I haven't done it yet. I'll put a link as soon as we're done with the show on the YouTube channel so you can go down if you're just listening to it. And yeah, that's it for this episode. See you next Tuesday.